On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, a week of trauma for three-term Democratic Senator and hawk Joe Lieberman, thrown overboard by Connecticut Democrats for his support of the Iraq War, for London and the whole world of air travel as an alleged terrorist plot to blow up 10 airliners over the Atlantic is foiled. The terrible is instantly political this week. Republicans charging Democrats with a stance of retreat and defeat. Democrats charging the GOP and George Bush with deeply misleading and botching national security. In less than 3 months, the voters will decide in midterm elections that could remake Washington. Up next on Point, a whiplash week and the politics of national security now. Joining me now from Washington to look at the week's top news is Jennifer Duffy. She's editor and political analyst for the Cook Political Report, the Capitol's go-to guide for what's going on in American politics. Jennifer Duffy, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Philadelphia is John Fund, big two-fisted columnist for the Wall Street Journal. John, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, Jack Beatty. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom, Jennifer, and John.
Great to have you all. Jennifer, take us in here. Lots of talk off of the primaries, particularly Lieberman's defeat. Charlie Cook, your colleague there at the Cook Report, saying the Republicans have a Category 4 or 5 hurricane bearing down on them, strong enough to destroy at least one of the party's majorities in the House or Senate. That written on August 5th. Here we go. A couple days later, terror in London. Where do we stand?
Well, it's interesting. First, let's look at Connecticut for a minute, only because while it surprised a lot of people that Joe Lieberman lost this primary, I'm not sure that it fundamentally changes anything nationally. What had happened in London yesterday gives Lieberman something to run on, and it gives Republicans something to run on. But I think what you'll see Republicans run on is their Democratic challengers are not prepared to take up this fight. They don't have the experience. They haven't been living it for the last 5 years. Democrats, though, for the first time, are going to push back on this issue. They're going to try and take national security from Republicans.
Do you think they can do it? Do the numbers say they can? Republicans are calling John Fund. Republicans are calling Democrats the retreat and defeat party now. But there's a lot of evidence in the polls that people are very unhappy with what's going on in Iraq. Where do you think we stand at the end of this week of primaries and terror scare?
In complete confusion. I think this election is going to be dictated largely by events on the ground, both in the economy and in foreign policy. The electorate is clearly in a surly mood. We had three incumbents losing for entirely different reasons on Tuesday. The Republicans are clearly in a world of hurt. They're hurt by images of them not being competent in Washington and, of course, the war in Iraq. On the other hand, there are these new factors that we have to throw into the mix. And I have to tell you, as bad as the Republican numbers are, and they're bad, there are some vulnerabilities the Democrats have. The latest Associated Press poll showed the public narrowly disapproving of how the Republicans are handling terrorism, but when asked what their view of the Democratic congressional approach to terrorism was, it was 65 negative, 31% positive. So I think the Republicans are still going to take losses. Clearly, it's a midterm election. Clearly, they have image and substance problems. But the Democrats have not stepped up to the plate and shown that they're a real opposition party that has clear answers for what clearly is turning the Republican into a surly mood.
Jack Beatty, how are you reading this? Lamont, of course, there's other races in Michigan and Georgia, notable defeats by incumbents, but everybody looking at Lieberman and Lamont and the war and security and then London. What do you see out there, Jack?
Well, for the first time that I've seen, the Washington Post poll on August 9th found that the Democrats were preferred on the war on terror by 46-38. We haven't seen that before. Now, if that holds up, that says that the Bush power, the Bush sword, the Bush argument is being negated, that people are perhaps taking Bush at his word and saying that, well, yeah, if Iraq is the central front in the war on terror and things are going so badly there, then maybe the overall war on terror is going badly too, and maybe Bush's strategy is wrong.
Jennifer, what do you see in these primaries, in the polls? John Fund says complete confusion out there, and clearly everybody is wrestling with this, and London has brought the security threat back in a major way. You say even before the Lieberman outcome, the polls were showing a picture. What does that picture look like? How does it hold up?
Let me make one note about that Washington Post poll. The poll also showed that only 27% of voters thought that Democrats actually had a plan on Iraq and therefore the war on terror. So again, what I have to agree with what John said, you know, they want change, but they're not sure the Democrats are that change. But, you know, the picture out there right now for Republicans still does look pretty bleak. I think that they are more likely than not to lose the House. The Senate's a little bit harder for them just because the opportunities aren't there. It's easy to see how they win 5 of the 6 seats that they need for control. That 6th seat, though, is going to be very difficult.
The 6th seat, of course, again, your colleague Charlie saying Democrats will take control of the House. Chances they'll seize the Senate rising toward 50-50. Tidal wave elections in the dissatisfaction numbers. What about the security issue? The Republicans have used it very effectively in a couple of elections now, John. We had Dick Cheney saying that Lieberman's loss might encourage the al-Qaeda types, quoting the vice president there, to break the will of the American people in terms of our ability to stay in the fight. Of course, it turns out he was probably aware when he said that of the impending arrests in Britain. That's kind of an astonishing thing. Do you think Republicans can take the security issue again, fear issue, whatever you want to call it, and ride it to success in November, John?
The voters I talk to increasingly are tuning out shrill rhetoric on both sides. They more or less believe that partisans are basically going to spin things their way, and spinning is, I think, losing some of its value. I think voters are going to just make up their own minds based on the facts that they think they see on the ground. I have to say, though, any polls that any of us cite, including the ones I cite, may have to be thrown out the window because all bets may be off the next 90 days. I think we can say safely that there are going to be 3 things that happen in the next 90 days. One is there's going to be certainly an attempt by the insurgents in Iraq to make things a whole lot worse to try to affect the elections. Secondly, the Iranians, apparently, according to the best intelligence sources, have made a calculated move that it's time to embarrass the United States with a confrontation in the Middle East. I think we are definitely going to see the Iranians send messages to their Hezbollah proxies that missiles that can hit Tel Aviv will be allowed to cross the border from Syria into Lebanon, and then they will be able to hit Tel Aviv. That sets up a very, very tough set of decisions for the U.S. And the third thing that I think we're going to see is that the Lieberman-Lamont debate, which is even though just one Senate race, is going to be carried on nationally. There's going to be a whole lot of discussion within the Democratic Party of exactly what is a security Democrat, what approach to take on security, and I think that that will distract from the unified Democratic message which they want to project, which is let's just pull out of Iraq. That message sells with voters, a lot of voters, about 55% think the Iraq war was a mistake. But here's the problem. If you can place Iraq in a broader context of the war on terror, and the London plot certainly does that, that dilutes the message. That confuses voters as to whether or not there's a clear decision on Iraq or whether or not pulling out of Iraq affects other elements of the equation, including now Lebanon and including now, of course, the London terror plot. So the whole thing has become much more complicated this week, and as a result, any of us who say we know where we're going or what the polls currently show, I think those are out the window depending on events on the ground.
Jack Beatty, which way do you see the fear factor pushing now?
Well, you know, there are so many balls in the air. It's really hard to say. I think that have Americans become inured to this. That is to say, have the repetitions of these warnings sort of worn away some of the alarm that we felt in the days after September 11th.
Let's hear Ned Lamont here at a rally this week as he went for the nomination for U.S. Senate.
We're going to go for it. I think we can change Washington, D.C., challenge the Bush administration, and put forward a strong, constructive alternative agenda of what he's doing to this country.
Strong, constructive alternative agenda. Here's Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman in an interview on CBS The Early Show saying his defeat was the result of misdirected anger.
I think this was all about Iraq and expressing anger toward President Bush. And, you know, I'm obviously not President Bush.
There they are. Let's hear from a couple of Connecticut voters. At the heart of this one, Tom's calling from Plantsville, Connecticut. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Good morning. Just wanted to make a point that I don't think is that I've heard, and that's I'm a registered Republican, and I've voted party lines, you know, right along. And I think this year I'm going to vote for Lieberman as an independent over the Republican candidate, and I've been talking to a lot of friends of mine. I think they are, too, and that's a point that hasn't been raised. I wonder what your opinion is on that.
Well, first tell us, Tom, why will you do that?
Well, I think that Lieberman has a good record. He's obviously well-connected in Washington, has a tremendous background in the government process.
But he says he's going to vote with the Democratic caucus. You're a Republican. Are you not worried about those votes?
Not really. I think that he's shown a very good choice in what he's voted on, and I think a consensus politics is really growing in favor. I am a little bit disappointed in the entire Iraq situation. I think we did a lot of mistakes disbanding the army, disbanding the police. I think was a big error, and I'm not as confident in that as I was in the beginning.
But Lieberman standing up with the president there, it doesn't bother you?
Not at all.
Tom, we've got it. Let me turn to Dennis, calling from Kent, Connecticut. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to say that the real reason Lieberman lost the election was because he lost touch with his constituents, and he wasn't paying attention. I think he was stunned when he finally realized how much trouble he was in. And I think that this is part of the arrogance that comes with being in power for 18 years, and I think it happens to everybody sooner or later. But I envision Lieberman as becoming the Captain Quig of Connecticut. The Democratic Party is mutinied, and he's not a Democrat anymore. He has his own party. So I think he's going to be a tragic figure this year.
So no thanks, Joe, you say. Jennifer Duffy, what about Lieberman's run as an independent? What are his chances?
Well, I think right now his chances are about even. Now, there's something you got to remember here. 43% of Connecticut voters are registered as independents.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
they
a lot.
Were not allowed to vote in the primary, in the Democratic primary. Republicans have a very weak candidate, so it's not surprising to hear Republicans, when faced with a candidate of their own party they know has no shot, or Lamont or Lieberman, where those voters go. This may get very interesting. There is much talk within Republican circles about changing candidates, and that could change the whole face of this race.
That is to try and slide a stronger candidate into this race.
That's right. Put a stronger Republican in, make it a very competitive three-way race. The pressure then on Lieberman to get out would be great, but it may be too late by then. But the gentleman who talked about Lieberman losing because he'd lost touch is absolutely right. I call a rock the match that lit the fire.
Jack Beatty, what about Democratic pressure on Joe Lieberman? Do you think he's still vulnerable to that, or is Joe carving his own way here, independent, and the rest be damned?
He does seem to have a kind of martyr complex now. I watched his it wasn't a concession speech. It was a speech of defiance. He has always seen himself as a very virtuous person and as motivated by virtue and principle. And I think this has sort of, as it were, characterologically served up an opportunity for him to go out in a blaze, or perhaps to be reelected in a blaze of virtue and principle. In other words, I don't think he's going to get out because this plays to his characterological, his view of himself as I stand for what's right, and that in a strange way, the ostracism he's going to receive may just reinforce that.
John Fund, do you see a stronger Republican in the wings that the party might be prepared to, send barreling into this scene?
Well, the strongest Republicans are already serving an elective office and are not going to make that shift. I think they would like to do what Jennifer suggests, but I think time is running out, so I predict they won't do that. I think that they realize there's a value to Lieberman winning as an independent. They might be able to get his votes on a lot more Senate issues. It would be ironic if the Senate were tied 50-50 and Joe Lieberman were in the catbird seat, holding the balance of power in the Senate.
Yeah.
But here's the irony. You know, Lamont won. It's a very, very signal accomplishment for him. But when voters who voted in the primary were asked who they would vote for in the fall, Lamont only had a 13-point lead among Democrats who voted in the primary. What that means is that if Lieberman can hold on to the Democrats that he had in the primary and who say they're going to vote for him in November, that means Lamont, let's say Lamont does incredibly well among liberal Republicans and gets 20% of the overall Republican vote, that still means, this goes to Jennifer's point, he has to win a clear majority of independents over Lieberman to win in the fall. He's going to have to run a very different campaign than he ran in the primary, where he was identified with the hard left, where he had Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and the head of the National Organization for Women on the stage with him for his victory rally. He's going to have to pivot and find some way to get independent and Republican votes if Lieberman holds on to the Lieberman Democrats.
Jennifer, you've got that huge independent block in Connecticut. What about nationally? If you look at the bases, Republican and Democrat, whose base is more revved up heading toward the November vote?
Oh, today I think that the Democratic base is much more revved up. The situation in London may change that. If they do start sending missiles into Tel Aviv, that may change that as Republicans get more fired up. And I have to say, one thing Republicans are counting on is, you know, this liberal left that John was talking about, the Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, the blogging community. Republicans are going to use that to their benefit to rev up their base in some marginal states, like maybe Missouri and Ohio, and send the message that hey, the Democratic Party is now run by the most liberal elements, and there's your choice.
Let's take a call from Owens Mills, Maryland. Martin's on the line. Hi, Martin. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah.
My point is, I think I agree with the gentleman that said spin might be losing some of its power, and I think it's in the net, it's a great thing for America as a whole. Whether Republican or Democrat, you know, we want to hold our leaders accountable, and I don't think the Republicans can hide behind blaming things on the Democrats when they've had the power for the last 6 years and had a real kind of a lockstep behind the president kind of a culture in Washington. How can they blame anyone else for the failings of the war or Katrina? And I think the things like the war and Katrina, for the average American, they're seeing that beyond the spin, that we do have some problems in our infrastructure. We do have some problems currently that need to be addressed, and they could care less what the politicians are saying, and they're going to be really paying attention to what's actually happening, and I think it's a good thing for the country.
Martin, thanks for that. John Fund, the spin here, it can go in lots of directions, but could Martin be right? Does it stop at some point? And people just look out at the reality of the headlines and trouble. If they do, which way do you see them putting blame?
Well, that was my original point. It depends on events on the ground. Let me give you two examples. We've had elections, midterm elections, in which there have been foreign policy problems. Let's take 1966, Vietnam, Lyndon Johnson. Democrats lost over 40 seats. Republicans wouldn't do that badly today because of gerrymandering and other things, but that was an example of a party losing power dramatically due to foreign policy reversals. On the other hand, you have the Cuban Missile Crisis, where you had a serious foreign policy crisis just before the election. President Kennedy had been viewed as weak on foreign policy, the meeting with Khrushchev in Vienna, Bay of Pigs, but he came out looking very good, and the Democrats surprisingly gained seats in that midterm election, which went against historical trends. So it depends on the form of the crisis, and I believe there will be one, because the insurgents and the terrorists, for one, certainly want to impact our election, as they tried to do in 2004. And depending on how those events are handled, depending on what shape they take, will affect whether or not Republicans or Democrats benefit from that.
Jennifer, if you look at this race historically, did you find an analog somewhere, looking back? What race has a similar dynamic, if any?
You know, I think if I look back, at least in my lifetime, it feels a little bit like 1980. You know, there's sort of a malaise hanging over the country. Americans are unsure of our position in the world. They don't like what they see. Obviously, a major difference is that was a presidential year. You had a very charismatic Republican in Ronald Reagan, who made a big difference in that election, but you still sort of see those elements of Americans sort of turning and looking for something else. My question is still, are Democrats offering them something else? Because Reagan clearly offered them a plan.
President Bush offering again yesterday after the news out of London. Let's listen to him on the significance of the thwarted transatlantic attacks.
This nation is at war with Islamic fascists who will use any means to destroy those of us who love freedom, to hurt our nation.
War described in blunter and blunter terms by the president. Joe's calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. The thought that I've had is that in 2002, 2004, on a national elections level, with foreign policy, the country has been in a mood very sort of thinking along the lines of anytime an event, terrible sort of events like terror plots and terrorism-related events, to sort of reacting from maybe a fear mode. And Republicans have been, you could say, maybe just opportunistic or maybe just smart to cash in on it. But this year there is a different thing. I even sort of sense something different just within the last day or two with the London terror plot, and that is that I think that people really are reacting completely. It's the flip side now, which is to say Democrats can really benefit from the idea that the administration has really practiced a failed foreign policy, and that things are coming home to roost, and that you know, generally people are beginning to actually it's working against Republicans, and the Democrats can, if they're smart enough, sort of benefit from that, because they begin to see all the negative impacts.
Joe, do you see the Democrats offering enough of a so what, so therefore, a plan to follow the criticism of failure?
No, I don't. I the first thing I do see was that Lamont spoke up. The first key factor was, you know, in the primary debate, he spoke up and he challenged Lieberman, and forcefully and confidently spoke up against Lieberman, and Lieberman being the voice of the moderate or even conservative sort of voice in favor of the war in his own party. That's the first thing that Democrats, in you know, because I'm not a Democrat, but Democrats would need to do is to defeat that voice in its party before the voices against the war and in favor of a different plan.
Before they can look out and take it to the Republicans. Let's listen for just a second to Senator Christopher Dodd, Democrat, Connecticut, at a rally for the nominee at that time, Ned Lamont.
People want change. They realize the direction this country is going in, both at home and abroad, is the wrong direction. They want a new direction. And that's really what voters, I think, were saying more than anything else.
Jack Beatty turning the corner on the sense of how everything's been handled. Does it boomerang on the Republicans now? Do the Democrats have enough beef to bring along with the criticism?
Well, you know, when you look at American elections over the long term, what leaps out is that what decides them are valence issues. That is to say, issues not like the issues in the campaign, I'll do this, you'll do that, but retrospective decisions on how incumbents have acquitted themselves in office, on the management of the government and on the economy, things that policy doesn't necessarily affect, but that you either get right or you get wrong. They're valence issues. And if you look at it that way, it is very hard, as the gentleman just reminded us, it's very hard to make the case with the anniversary of Katrina coming up, with the debacle in Iraq, on and on, that this government has been run competently. Even Republicans have conceded as much, that they've just been terribly disappointed in that. Now, that argues for the kind of retrospective vote on how competently the government's been run. And secondly, there is the economic issue. Wages are stagnant. Wages were lower in May 2006 than in November 2001. Now, these two things, just all by themselves, would argue, at least given the long pattern of things, retrospective voting on how the economy is doing, that is, how my pocketbook is doing, that would augur very, very ill for Republicans.
John Fund, how about it? The competence issues and the Republican base. Do you think Republicans may, you know, sort of tote up what's gone on in these years and say, everything else aside, I'm just not that enthusiastic and just not turn out?
That's their biggest problem, and of course the spending issue in Washington, where Republicans have dropped the ball and let a lot of pork barrel spending through, has certainly hurt them. But let's go back to the only firm numbers that we have, which was June was a horrible month for Republicans as well. We had the special election in San Diego.
Yep.
And despite all of those problems, in the end, the Democratic candidate did not get any higher a percentage of the vote than John Kerry's vote in that district in 2004. So the turnout may be down. The question is it down enough to affect control of the Senate and the House? I'm not sure we're there yet. Republicans are in a world of hurt. But again, Democrats have to present themselves as a viable alternative party to independent voters if they're going to get their turnout up enough to really make the difference and to capture and control.
Jennifer, do you see that Democrat message congealing here, coming together?
You know, it's interesting. It started to before London. It wasn't anything particularly new. They put out 6 points, 406, six things that they could do if they were in the majority in the first 90 days. Harry Reid, the Senate Democratic leader, is on a New Direction for America tour right now. But it hasn't really taken hold yet.
Here's Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff on PBS's NewsHour with Jim Lehrer saying the U.S. government cannot guarantee safety unless it takes drastic measures.
If we were to make that promise, we would have to really shut down our way of life. And that's the kind of balance in which I think we're going to have to get accustomed to over the long run.
We're at 1-800-423-8255. John's calling from Boston. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Well.
Listen, I fear for America because I think this administration has no credibility on anything, on anything it's done. It lied us into Iraq, and we keep using this language that Iraq was a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. It was a purposeful lie. They lied us into the war. Then after we were in the war and things were going bad, they continued to lie about it. They had no credibility. Katrina, Chertoff, he was head of Homeland Security, ostensibly head of FEMA. He has no credibility.
But has it changed the voters? Are there enough voters who see it your way, John, that you think it'll change in November?
It will change if we change this administration. Absolutely. These people don't care about America.
But it's not a presidential election. It's all about those congressional seats. Do you think there's enough?
I think that people are realizing they're catching up to the lies. These people lie.
John, we've got it. Let me take a call from Buffalo, New York. Alice is on the line. Hi, Alice. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a former Republican, now an independent. I think bombs are not the answer. I think we're learning, and by the election time, we will realize that a whole new approach to this problem needs to be taken. I think our own democracy is threatened unless there's a change.
Alice, we've got it. John Fund, what about the tough security approach? I mean, it's been a big price in Iraq, 2,600 U.S. troops, $320 billion. Within the Republican Party, where Republicans need a big turnout, what about the war cry? President Bush continues to use that in a way as his primary cry here. Are Republicans still solid on seeing things that way? War, the kind of war George Bush has prosecuted here is the answer.
The polls show Republicans still more or less sticking with the president, where the collapse in popular support for the war has been with independent voters, and of course Democrats are about 80% against the war. So as we head into the election, I think Iraq is certainly a minus for the Republicans, but there's an elephant in the room that we have to mention, which is voters won't often admit it, but the economy still plays the bigger role in most people's personal decisions at the ballot box.
Even now with bombs and fire everywhere.
And polls bear that out. If you look at what the most important issue is, I was looking at some today. Immigration is number three. Iraq is a distant second. The economy is still the most important issue. And there you have a battle between the insecurity that people have about outsourcing and high oil prices and the fact that most people are working, we have historically high employment levels, and the economy is still growing at a rapid clip.
But what about the wage issue that Jack raised, that the partaking in that bounty has not exactly trickled down?
Well, again, it depends who votes. if you have people with stagnant wages who vote and they make up a large portion of the electorate, they certainly may express that discontent. But an awful lot of people are prospering in this economy. The question becomes, do the disaffected vote, or they just remain disaffected and say, they look at both parties and say, neither of these guys are saying much that I really believe in. And that's the whole point. If a party fails, and the Republican Party has been seen to have failed in confidence levels with many voters, this question still remains. Do people stay home, or do they believe the Democrats offer enough of an alternative that they get off their tush and they actually go to the polls? Historically, in midterm elections, voter turnout is significantly lower than presidential elections. So the issue is the turnout, and can Democrats convince people they actually will make a difference?
Jennifer Duffy, look out toward Michigan with us for a minute here. You had a moderate Republican there, Joe Schwartz, in the 7th Congressional District, dumped in the primary. His opponent, Tim Walberg, backed by the Club for Growth, spent $1 million-plus to get him that primary victory, conservative group out of Washington, but he's much more conservative. What do you make of that Republican primary message?
Well, I think Joe Schwartz's fate was probably determined in 2004 when he won as the only moderate a very contested, crowded Republican primary. It's a conservative district, and Schwartz never mastered the art of walking the fine line between his own moderate views and the more conservative views of his constituents. The aim this time was to make sure this was not a crowded primary, to put one conservative in there. And he won. I'm not sure Schwartz was ever ahead in this race. But it does, you know, it does speak a little bit to how willing voters are to dump incumbents. And Michigan is an interesting case, period, because the economy there is so bad. They are almost, they near last in unemployment, in job creation. But Democrats are in charge there by and large. So if voters take their frustrations on the economy out, it's going to hurt Democrats in Michigan.
John Fund, what do you make of the Schwartz-Walberg race? Schwartz, the moderate, said when it was all over, I look at this election as probably a victory for right to life, anti-abortion, anti-embryonic stem cell groups, but it's a net loss for the Republican Party because it just pushes the party farther to the right. What do you say, John?
Well, you know, that's an interesting interpretation, except that the group that provided over 85% of the challenger's money was the Club for Growth, which is choose social issues, doesn't discuss them, doesn't even take a position on abortion, and all of its messages were on taxes and spending. So to the extent that voters got messages in the campaign and why that Joe Schwartz should be dumped, some certainly may have voted on socially conservative grounds, but the issues that Walberg pushed in the election, if you look at his speeches and his campaign and his advertising, they were appealing to Republicans who were upset by big government and the big spending machine in Washington. The social issues were not the major element in the actual campaign.
Jack, you've been following Republicans a little bit as they dance around President Bush and his low poll numbers. What do you see out there on the GOP side?
Well, there's a very funny piece by Ryan Lizer in the current New Republic called Analyze Dis. And he analyzes the way our Republican congressional candidates are dissing the president. I mean, the president is ahead, is above 50% in only three states. So they're adapting to that. And he's got an anecdote after anecdote. I mean, the one famous one is Tom Kaine in New Jersey, the Senate candidate. He arrived late, just after the vice president had left a Kaine fundraiser. He said, I got tied up in traffic.
Yeah.
Thelma Drake down in Virginia Beach, president came and raised $500,000 for her. She didn't bother to show up. Well, there was an urgent vote in Washington. Well, the bill in question passed 395-0. And he goes on and on. Then you get some candidates who appear with him, like Heather Wilson in New Mexico. They go to and then they come out with ads that say, "Oh, we're independent of the president." There's one guy in Washington State who appeared with the president, and that got him slammed in the local press. And so he turned around and changed his position on stem cell research to show that he was independent of the president. So there's a lot of dissing of Bush going on out there among Republicans.
Jennifer Duffy, the president's staff said he's going to cut his Crawford vacation short, so he was eager to get on the campaign trail. Will he be welcome? Will he be effective there?
I think there's a big difference between the president raising money for candidates and the president campaigning with candidates. by and large, fundraisers are closed press events. There aren't reporters in the room. You know, would you take those that 1 or 2 days of stories for the, you know, $1 million the president can bring you? That seems, you know, to be worth the price, certainly. I don't know how much actual campaigning he's going to do. You know, the airport rallies, you know, those kinds of things. I don't think that's been determined yet. I think there are some Republicans out there that will welcome it and some who will say to him, Mr. President, thank you, but no thank you.
John Fund, if the Congress should swing, let's say the House or even the House and Senate should go to the Democrats, what do you expect for the final 2 years of this presidency? How would that change Washington?
Government by subpoena.
I.e.?
The Democrats, both publicly and privately, have already on record. They feel that Congress has let Bush off easy the last 6 years. They would hold hearings on everything from eavesdropping to the war in Iraq. They would subpoena the entire government. John Conyers was temporarily shut up when he was talking about impeachment, but he is now again privately telling colleagues that the Bush impeachment move would be on the table again. And that's going to be one of the questions the Democrats face. They have these 6 points, including the minimum wage and other things that they have as a plan. But the activists, the bloggers, the MoveOn.org types, are not calling so much for economic legislation or social legislation. They're calling for anti-Bush moves by a new Democratic Congress. And the question is, does the Ned Lamont victory push the Democrats into such a confrontational stage with the Bush White House, should they win control of either House of Congress, that we have complete government by gridlock and a round of investigations that would put some of the investigations the Clinton administration went through to shame?
Jack Beatty, what do you see on the other side? If it were a Democratic sweep, government by subpoena?
That's a possibility for sure. But isn't it interesting that Chris Shays is going to, the Connecticut Republican, is going to have start hearings in September about the Bush management of the war in Iraq. That's a Republican. So we're going to get some Republican oversight as they try to show there won't be subpoenas, but there's certainly going to be oversight. And Arlen Specter continues to talk about, more oversight and more investigation.
But do you take that seriously? I mean, hasn't Congress been pretty much just a carpet for this president?
Oh, it has, but I'm saying that even that right now, Republicans are shifting. John Warner gave a very significant comment when the generals before him said, we may be at the verge of civil war in Iraq. He said, well, if civil war breaks out there, and by the way, this month may test it as we put 15,000 more troops into Baghdad to try to hold off civil war. But if civil war comes, you have to come back to us, he said to the Bush administration, and get a new resolution. Well, what would that resolution say? We fight for the Sunni? We fight for the Shiites? Who, you know, the absurdity of that suddenly, I think, is coming home. And when you have people like John Warner making those arguments, that's a new level of congressional challenge, it seems to me, to Bush.
Maybe a new Republican leash waiting for the president. But I wonder, Raymond's calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hi, Raymond. You're on the air.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
We're all right. What do you think, Raymond?
Got a point for you. Now, this is the answer to it all. Whoever can realize first that tanks on the ground are just not going to win this, and that B-2 bombers and all of that are not going to keep people from bringing these vials of explosives on airplanes and organizing this stuff, whoever can figure that out first is going to get the support of the American people.
You think Scotland Yard figured it out this week, Raymond?
Scotland Yard did what the Pentagon could not do, and the Pentagon can't do that. We need to spend more money on intelligence. We need to spend more money on this detective work that really, you know, solves stuff like this, because they were ready to pull the trigger and Scotland Yard was following them the whole way. We could do that just as well as they can. I mean, you've seen CSI. I mean, we can do that. We can do it on the other end. You know,
well, we have good imaginations whether we're doing it or not. But Raymond, thanks for your call. Jennifer, how about it? Bombs in a bottle. Raymond says whoever can address those is the winner, that the big stick, the Bush approach, you know, tanks and big military doesn't look so effective. How do you think that's playing?
Well, you know, the caller's probably right that if for example, Homeland Security or the CIA had had uncovered this plot, it would have been seen as a huge win. But look, the reality is that we have tanks on the ground because there are our enemies have tanks on the ground, and until that goes away, we're always going to have tanks on
the
ground.
What do you mean by enemy tanks on the ground?
Well, I mean, look, you know, what's going on?
Suicide bombers in Iraq?
Yeah, suicide bombers in Iraq. This growing potential for civil war there. What's going on between Israel and Hezbollah? You know, as long as all of that exists, you know, you need to put some focus on more conventional means of dealing with that. So there's not a quick answer, and maybe this is a large part of the problem. This is not easily solved. It's not going to be quickly solved. And Americans are not the most patient people in the world. And I think that they get frustrated. But can I get back to a second, you know, to talk about this government by subpoena? And
yes,
I don't disagree.
Please.
I don't disagree with John. I think that that's exactly right. I mean, I've heard Democratic leaders say it, but they should keep something in mind too. And this is a bit controversial. But when you have the majority in one or both chambers of Congress, you then have a responsibility to lead and govern. And they won't have the kind of majority they need to do that. And looking towards 2008, to be the government by subpoena could be very, very problematic for their presidential candidate.
John Fund, with the Wall Street Journal editorial page, let me just get you on this issue of tanks on the ground, boots on the ground. Are you still a stay-the-course guy, or are you beginning to have doubts about the Iraq strategy?
Well, I just wanted to go back to one of the points that mentioned about the public's concern for security. There is real reason to be concerned. We have disrupted a lot of terror plots that we have not been able to publicly talk about. This London plot was so big it had to get out. But here's the reason why we have to be concerned. There's a poll out in Britain today. 45% of British Muslims, let me repeat, 45% of British Muslims believe the 9/11 attacks were a conspiracy between the United States and Israel. I have watched focus groups of Arabs in Dearborn, Michigan, which would curl your hair. There is a danger of a homegrown terrorist community in this country, much as there is in Britain, and that's what is driving people, our intelligence services, crazy, because we can stop many of the terrorists from entering this country, but if they develop their cells here, there is no end to the trouble that they can cause. And I have to tell you, you know, there's already been a plot against shopping centers that was recently broken up. They could strike at any time, and Lord help us, none of us want that to happen. But if it happens before the election, all bets are off as to how that will be viewed and what the government's response will be, whether it will be viewed as adequate or inadequate.
Jack Beatty, we just got a couple seconds. John Fund says they, but they are us in a way. How's Bush policy done on that? What do you think the voting booth judgment of the American people will be on security on that front?
You know, I'm really surprised, John. You don't have any evidence that Americans are serving Al Qaeda. I mean, you may have seen some focus groups where people were. I really think we have to avoid that kind of talk. I mean,
they are us.
We are all Americans.
I'll send you the polls.
Polls from the United Kingdom.
From the UK.
We'll watch the United States. In fact, in our next hour, we're going to be talking with and about American Muslims. I want to thank all of you for being with us this hour. John Fund with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us. Jennifer Duffy at the Cook Political Report in Washington. Jennifer, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty in Hanover, New Hampshire. Jack, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.